Welcome to episode 62 of the Golf Talk podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski. Joining me this week, both of our other staff members, Jeff Smith in Washington and Jack Waddell in New Jersey. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
All right. Well, we had an exciting weekend this week on the PGA Tour. We'll get to that in a bit. First off, Tim Fincham has seemingly reversed his decision or his opinion or his stance of earlier this year and decided that, hey, maybe we do want drug testing on the PGA Tour. He expects to have something in place by the end of the year. The article we'll link to, of course, mentions the LPGA's recent drug testing policy, where the first penalty for testing positive for a banned substance, not that they've listed those substances yet, the first time you test positive, a 25 tournament ban, basically a 1 year ban. What do you guys think of drug testing on the PGA Tour? Of course, Jeff and I have talked about this before. Jack, your opinion.
Well, I think Fincham was swimming against the tide in delaying or avoiding instituting a policy. I think I read something today that some countries, and the PGA Tour wants to get a little bit more international, I think. Some countries are requiring pro athletes to be tested. So it's really got to come. I don't think it's a problem, but I think, you know, just for all kinds of reasons, they have to have it on the books.
Yeah, it sounded to me like he was listening to our podcast when we were talking about this, because he's basically saying the same things we were, that he makes a statement. It's unfortunate that these realities are with us, but they are. We have to deal with them. And, of course, he kind of pushes to make standardized testing across all professional levels, so that's something that is a little more wide-ranging than I think we expected.
Right. Our opinion has pretty much always been, hey, we don't believe there's a problem. Everyone says there's not, and we believe them. But by not having testing, it looks like you're trying to hide something. So better to test and show that we were right than to hide behind whatever. Just saying that, no, we're honorable. We don't have that. So that summarizes our point. Moving on to our next story. Good to see, though, the PGA Tour moving forward. Tiger Woods is certainly on board with that, too. He made comments earlier saying, hey, tomorrow wouldn't be too early. Also good to see Drew Weaver, a 28-year-old American and a Virginia Tech student, win the... Oh, sorry, he's 20. He ended a 28-year American drought at the British Amateur. So Drew Weaver, 20-year-old Virginia Tech student, defeated Australia's Tim Stewart 2-1 in the 36-hole final. Big news here, really. Europeans can't win our U.S. Open, but apparently now we can win their British Amateur.
I think it's a great story. For one, breaking the 28-year drought in that event, and two, that he was a Virginia Tech kid, and even had, I think, a little patch on his bag commemorating those who died during that awful attack.
Yeah, an outstanding win for him. Obviously, he came into the final few holes, the back nine, I should say. He was up 5 or 6, and then the Australian fought back. But sounded like I didn't get to see any of it. I'm not sure if any of us did, but what a outstanding win bit of golf that it seemed.
Yeah, and he dedicated the entire win to, or the entire week, to the 32 who died that day. He was there and actually ran away from the library, so he was right in the area when all that stuff was happening. But it ends a 28-year drought for Americans in the British Amateur, but I wonder, since they're amateurs, how many of them go over there? It's quite expensive when you're not guaranteed any money, and in fact, you can't win any money. It's quite expensive to go over there, so I wonder how many Americans actually go to the British Amateur to really compete. I mean, you know, if we only have three guys in the field every year, tough to win, but good to see an American win over in across the pond. This weekend, I think you guys will agree, was probably one of the best weekends of PGA Tour golf of the year. And in fact, one of the best weekends I can remember in quite a few years, maybe since Tiger and Phil at Doral. Really kind of a showdown between Hunter Mahan and Jay Williamson. Jay Williamson playing on a sponsor's exemption, finished second, but locked up his playing privileges on the PGA Tour for next year, with just winning enough money, basically. Exciting golf. What do you tell us about it?
Well, it was riveting golf. I think that whole back nine between Mahan and Williamson was just stunning. The consecutive birdies that Mahan posted early on in that back nine seemed to, you know, grab the tournament and, you know, have it in hand.
Yeah, and the way Williamson, two up through 14, I believe.
Yeah, and the way Williamson came back and hung in there, made that tremendous up and down on, I believe it was 17?
16. Well, 17, yeah. 16 was the putt. 15, I think he hold 17, he made a long par putt after yanking a pitching wedge. He made a great up and down on that par 3 where he putted it over this big hump.
Yeah, what a shot that was.
Right.
I mean, that was just amazing.
Yeah, and the last hole then, Williamson, one stroke up, puts it to about, I'd say 18 feet. Mahan puts it to about 10 feet and holds his putt while Williamson misses. Then they play the 18th hole again. Williamson puts it to 10 feet, basically where Mahan's ball was, and Mahan puts it to less than 2 feet. Williamson misses, Mahan taps in for a second consecutive birdie on the 18th hole to win. He's the youngest winner on the PGA Tour this year.
Well, they didn't really leave any room for criticism. We've had a fair bit of criticism this year of how people have been unable to finish tournaments, and boy, these guys just came in strong, and it was really neat to see, especially those last two holes, to see Hunter Mann stuff a shot like he did on that first playoff hole, and that was some good golf.
And I was thinking of that too while they were playing, because Mahan kind of stumbled a little bit. You know, the three putt on that 16th hole from 25 feet, maybe, really kind of a poor effort. And I started to wonder if maybe he was not quite, you know, holding it together, but certainly pulled it together right after that. So really
did. And I think it was that the sand shot, the fairway sand shot on 17, as I recall, where he bladed it over the green.
Right.
But still, you know, that was a
yeah, he bogeyed that hole as well.
You know, it could have been over. It could have been much worse. And, boy, that was just so much fun to watch. And Mike Carroll, who's quite a sports fan, who didn't get excited much in watching the U.S. Open, sure got excited at the end of that. That was a great dinnertime conversation.
Great golf. And, again, Hunter Mahan, his first PGA Tour win. Jed Williamson, playing on a sponsor's exemption, plays well enough to lock up his rights, basically, for next year on the PGA Tour. So congratulations to him at age 40. Lorena Ochoa is basically turning into the majorless Annika Sorenstam. She seems to win a lot of LPGA Tour events, say, you know, a third or a half the ones it seems like she plays in, except the majors. I don't have much to say here other than good for her, but at this point she really needs to win some majors.
Well, I think she got one muck here off her back. I think this might have been her first playoff win.
Right.
And, you know, so that's one little item checked off on the career resume. But she, you know, she's starting to remind me of really more Tom Watson and maybe even Phil Mickelson, who were, you know, clearly established themselves as top-level players, but took a long time for them to get that first major.
Yeah, and if you cross gender lines and just say who's the best player never to have won a major, I think Lorena Ochoa has to top that list at this point.
Oh, I agree.
And girls considered.
I agree.
It didn't take long. Now, we've seen really the transfer of power from Annika Sorenstam not too long ago to Lorena Ochoa. She really wasn't on our radar here a year ago. Two years ago.
She was a good young player, but that's about it. You're right.
Yeah, that was about it. And so here she stepped into this void that we didn't even think existed a little while ago. And, you know, she's having to find her feet. She's playing very well. And I think, you know, a win like this has given her a lot of confidence. She made the statement, I'm ready, I'm prepared, I like my chances for the U.S. Open at Pine Needles, and we're looking forward to that tournament. Eric, you and I haven't played that course, and so that's going to be a fun one, and boy, I like her chances at any major. I think it's just a matter of time for her to pick up one of those victories.
Right, I'm still rooting for Laura Davies at Pine Needles, just so she can get her... Just so she can get in the Hall of Fame. She needs two wins, which I think is less likely than one major. So
right.
I'm rooting for her. But
okay.
Lorena can finish second. So
plenty of time left for Lorena.
That's right. Even though she was going to retire at 30, right?
Oh, well, sure.
We'll be right back after this message from Titleist. Stay tuned.
I'm working on shortening my swing.
Holding up more trophies.
Making the next Ryder Cup team.
Posting more low numbers.
Making everything I look at.
Getting the club more in line at the top.
Drawing the ball.
Working on my pivot.
Being more consistent.
More wins.
More wins.
More wins.
More wins.
Full majors.
Just trying to get better.
Working on beating this guy.
Working on a whole lot of things.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
And welcome back. Tiger Woods, the Monday after the U.S. Open, had a kid. Sam Woods, a girl, obviously, was born early Monday morning and is doing well. We'll see pictures eventually, I suppose, but personally, I don't really care. I'm not a voyeurist. That's a voyeurist stuff like that, because whatever. Tiger Woods had a kid. No, big deal, right? Kids are born every day, but you know, big news, just because it'll be interesting to see how it affects him or how people think it affects him. Probably won't affect him one bit, but people draw their own conclusions.
Well, exactly. And I think the big benefit for us is that we might have a chance of seeing him in the British Open.
Yeah, born 2 or 3 weeks early by most counts. Basically,
yeah,
3 weeks. So not too early to cause a problem, but 3 weeks early is pretty significant.
Yeah, and if Jack Nicklaus is any indication, of course, he was a real family man. He played very well with a family. So I don't think, obviously, this is going to change Tiger Woods' whole outlook on life, but I'm not anticipating this affecting his ability to play good golf.
Jack, of course, won all of his majors with children and with a family and stuff. So Tiger Woods still has 18 majors to go with a family to catch Jack Nicklaus's record.
Well,
go ahead.
I don't know. I think that might be a little bit of a different dynamic.
That might be a little strange. Huh?
Two families.
Yeah.
You spotted him, you know, 8 years on the thing there. So Michelle Wie, probably the best decision she's made in the past 2 years, has opted to pull out of the John Deere Classic, of course, before it's begun. That's in about 2 or 3 weeks, I believe. So she's not going to play the PGA Tour in the John Deere Classic. A good move here.
Oh, yes, very good move, and we all thank her and applaud her. Maybe she's taking some advice. No, she knew this. She put this out way before I wrote my Trap 5, but you know, this is a great move for Michelle Wie, and I think it's a good step for her just to, yeah, she needs to go play the U.S. Open this coming weekend and some of these women's events if she can get an exemption, but that's a good move for her.
And Jack, the Jay Williamson playing well and finishing second and almost winning on a sponsor exception kind of gives credence to what some people say, where they say she's taking a spot. You know, Jeff and I have never really bought into that because we've always kind of said, hey, it's the sponsor's exemption. Their goal is to raise money and get fans there. And if she does that, fine. But it kind of lends a little credence to the guys that say, yeah, it's still a spot that could go to someone that might make the cut and win.
Well, especially given her most recent performances against the men, where, you know, she really failed miserably, even, you know, coming close to a cut. You know, I agree that, you know, she's worth it as a draw. But you look at a guy like Williamson, whose, you know, livelihood depends on this. And, you know, it turned his career around that one weekend. And had Michelle been in the field, maybe he wouldn't have been.
Our last story here this week is the story of people who sue golf courses because their houses get hit by golf balls. you know, I mean, this is a bit of, you know, it's kind of annoying to me, you know, that you would buy a house on a golf course and then complain that, you know, you're getting hit by golf balls. But
exactly. Rare is the house that's, you know, somebody buys and then somebody puts a golf course next to it where you're in range of the incoming. So I really don't have a whole lot of sympathy for those people other than the fact that they were, you know, woefully ignorant when they chose that property. I mean,
yeah, and I'm surprised how many people buy a house on a golf course that don't play golf.
Exactly.
So they don't know that golfers are bad, basically.
And yeah, and if you buy it,
it's like 20 yards over there. I'll be fine, right?
Yeah, if you buy a house in slice territory on a golf course, you know, you're not a golfer, because I think anybody who knows anything about the game knows they're going to get pelted. What cracked me up about this story is this woman had a golf ball come through the window and into her stove.
Right,
so
it broke her.
I mean,
these
are
something. Bad golfers, but the maintenance guy or the course owner blames bigger drivers and people swinging harder. Jack, you wanted to talk about the fact that golf balls actually don't go farther offline now because of the spin.
Well, I think it was a Times reporter who said, you know, the problem was caused by bigger drivers, is it hit it further and wider. I'm not so sure they're hitting it wider. They're just hitting it farther.
Right.
You know, back in the day, you know, in the forum, I think there's a thread going on about people who have played or grew up playing or at some point in their career played Balata and Persimmon. And as one who did, who learned the game and played it for years that way, those Balata balls spun like nuts. And boy, I'll tell you what, I don't see people slicing nearly hitting the bananas that I did back in the 60s and 70s.
No, 220-yard 30-degree blocks are now 250-yard 30-degree blocks.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's certainly not the spin, though. But yeah, I remember playing once at some course in Scottsdale, and you know, cut through condos and homes and everything else. And I mean, you could look up at the stucco, you know, see dents in the stucco on the side of the houses where they've been pelted, broken red tile up on the roof. You know, it was like a war zone. It was funny. For me. Well, not for them.
Not for them, no. I mean, it kind of stinks to have to put a net up, but, you know, don't buy a house. You know, buy a house next to a park instead of a golf course.
Well, I don't have much sympathy for anybody who buys a house on a golf course. You know what's going to happen. If you want to avoid it, get a better location, like behind the tee.
Behind the tee or left of the, you know, left and away from the green or something, yeah.
There was one other funny thing in that article that I just got to relate that there was some woman saved up 18,000 golf balls that had landed in her property and hauled them.
1,800 or something. She took them to court.
Took them to court with her. You know, here they are.
Oh, well. That about does it for episode 62 of the Golf Talk Podcast, a little shorter this week than our U.S. Open edition. What else to talk about? Of course, Jeff and I will be interested in watching the U.S. Women's Open this week, and we encourage you to watch it. It's played on a great course, Pine Needles. Probably Jeff and mine's one of our favorite courses that we've ever played, way up there. So have a look at that. You know, Pinehurst with a little more character, I would call it. And the women will be playing it from tees that give it a little more character as well. So check that out this week. For Jack and Jeff, this is Eric saying ta-ta for now.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
So long.